This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's
go. Permission granted.
All right.
And we come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Right now, the Cavaliers lead the Heat 31-24. LeBron's not playing. Kyrie is not playing. Cavaliers are sitting their two stars with still the hopes that they can pull out a win in Miami over the Heat, who are barely a 500 team, actually sub-500. If they do, they put the pressure on the Celtics as they're still looking to lock up that number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Cavaliers' magic number is 2, so a Cleveland win tonight and then a Celtics loss, but they're taking on the Nets tonight, would clinch it. In baseball, the story of the night, the Chicago Cubs raising their banner. 108 years, and now the curse is lifted. It's opening night, although it's a rainy opening night in Chicago at Wrigley Field. And joining us on the show is a guy that won 2 championships himself as a member of the New York Yankees in 1996 and 1999. Jim Leyritz, also a sports analyst and talk show host on Sports Blender, which airs on SB Nation. And he joins us here on the show. Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing today?
Doing great, man. Thanks so much for joining us. You know, speaking of the Cubs, they obviously are a formidable threat yet again this year. Do you consider them the biggest favorite to win the World Series again in 2017?
Well, listen, I wouldn't go that far. I would say I favor them to win their division. You know, playoffs and World Series, you never know what's going to happen, and I don't care. You know, it's one of the most difficult things to do is repeat. You know, I know, you know, there have been teams that have done it. Our teams did it in the 90s, but it's not that easy. But as far as their division goes, yes, I think they have a great shot at winning that division again.
Take us back to 1997. You guys obviously were tremendous in 96. You win the World Series in 97. What was it like to try to defend it, and what didn't you guys do? Where did it fall short in the defense?
Well, you know, remember now, I got traded in 97.
That's right.
What I will tell you, though, as far as how there was still influence from what I did before in 96, you know, the Yankees win in 96. If we don't win in 96, that World Series, and we lose the way we were losing in the beginning, and they lost like they did in 97 with Alomar, you know, hitting the home run off Mariano in the first round of the playoffs, I don't think they keep Joe Torre. I don't think that whole team stays together, and I think Steinbrenner cleans house. So that was really, really important. But talking to most of the guys, you know, again, just being traded, still coming back to play against them with Anaheim, they didn't feel the same pressure that they did in 98, 99, because by then it was expected them to win. You know, I talked to a lot of the guys that 97 year. They really enjoyed it because they were number one on the high of winning the World Series in 96, but there still wasn't that expectation that they had to repeat every year like it began later in the 90s.
That's interesting. So you think that Joe Torre's, his stability was still that tenuous, even having made the World Series in 96. Had you guys lost, do you think that they probably would have cleaned house with him, huh?
Only if they were lost like they did in 97. I don't think they would have, you know, they wouldn't have cleared him in 96. I think if they would have lost like we did in 96 and they would have lost again in 97, I think George would have said, hey, listen, you know, Buck Showalter got me to the playoffs. I can get to the playoffs. You can't get me back to the World Series. I got to find somebody else to come in here, especially as embarrassing as the first 2 games against Atlanta were. And then, of course, how Game 4 started off could have been, again, the most embarrassing, another embarrassing loss in the World Series for us. I just think that on top of losing like they did in 97, that George probably would have cleaned house.
And, of course, you were the hero in that Game 4 of the 1996 World Series. Jim Leyritz joins us here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio, which fast-forwards us to today's Yankees team, where they're going through something that really hasn't been done since the early to mid-90s, which is rebuilding with youth and with young talent. Do you think this is the right mode, the right move by the Yankees to finally go in this direction?
Yeah, I think Brian Cashman recognized, just like Gene Michael did in 1990, that, you know what, this free agency, these older guys that they had big contracts for, that it was time to start getting rid of some of those and slowly filtering the young kids that they had in their farm system. And, you know, it was one of those things I remember as being a minor league player that our joke was get traded somewhere because you go to the big leagues because there's no room in the Yankees. You know, and it's interesting because about 2 years ago, I was doing a Yankee fantasy camp and I was talking to Greg Bird, and it was before Bird got caught up in that September the year or that year before with that he had the big year for them. And I talked to him and he kind of was reiterating exactly how we felt, or I felt, and a bunch of minor leaguers felt, that they were feeling that same way because for so long they had been stuck behind A-Rod, Jeter, Cano, Teixeira. If you were an infielder, and you know, for those 10 years that those guys were there, you weren't going anywhere. And I think Cashman realized, you know what, this is a good time to do it. We're going to have, you know, we're going to save a ton of money coming off of these big contracts. We do have some of these kids who have been killing it in the minor league. Let's give them a chance. And maybe they can turn magic again like they did in the early 90s.
Can we put into any type of context what Mike Trout's been able to do by the age of 25? The guy has two MVP awards already. He's come in second place three other times. He's a star defensively. He's incredible at the plate. I mean, how do we account for a guy this good, this young?
Well, you know, the other thing that impresses me is just his mannerisms and his polite attitude that he has towards the fans, towards everything. I mean, I'm fortunate to be here in Anaheim, 20 minutes from Anaheim, and get to see him play quite a bit. And, you know, it was actually like being a teammate of Derek Jeter's. There was a greatness to him, but there was also an ethic to them that they couldn't be taught. That was just instilled by their family, their parents, you know, whoever it was instilled by. These kids, they had it figured out at such an early age. And, you know, the one thing that I'm worried about Mike Trout, as far as being out here in California, is, you know, he's got two MVPs already. He wants to win. And the way things have gone for the Angels lately, you know, I think, you know, another year or two when he's up for free agency, they might lose him if they don't start doing something out here.
What can they do? What do they have to do to surround him with a winner?
Well, they got to go spend some money. They've got to spend some money on, you know, bringing in a good pitching staff and people that, you know, and surround him with the people that are going to help him win. And I think, you know, it's really now more than never. Because you got Pujols, you know, it looks like he's going to have a good year. He's healthy again. This is the year, the next year or two to do it. And like I said, I think if he gets the free agency and they haven't done better than third place, I think there's a good opportunity that they lose him to free agency.
Jim Leyritz joining us here on the show. Two very interesting storylines early. What we thought were losers leading their division. The Minnesota Twins are 5-1. The Diamondbacks are 6-2. Out of those two teams, who's got the more realistic staying power?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, it's one of those things that I love Paul Molitor. You know, I think he's, you know, as a player, he's one of the most professional, one of the greatest. I think his team right now is starting to buy into his program a little bit more than they did over the last 2 years. And I think they've got a great, you know, they've got a good bunch of kids. They don't have any superstars, but they have some really, really good group of kids. And who knows? But in all honesty, I do think that if someone's going to hold on, I think the Diamondbacks have a better chance just because I think their team's a little more well-established.
You know, when we look around this league right now, it's all about these young stars. And I wonder, do you think that's an effect of PEDs being wiped from the game and that the older guys that have been taking jobs and playing really well because of PEDs now aren't there so that it kind of allowed this influx of youth?
I'm not going to say no, that's not maybe part of the cause, but I will say this. The problem and the positive of this is I think that these kids are starting from such a young age to be one sport oriented that, you know, what we're seeing with these 24, 25, 26-year-old pitchers especially, that they're being injured, you know, and they're going through these Tommy Johns and they're going through all these surgeries because at such a young age they make a decision or their parents make a decision that they're going to become a one-sport athlete and only play that one sport. In a way, I think it's beneficial because these kids are ready at a younger age, but overall I think it's detrimental to the game because I think, like I said, these kids get hurt because we always used to joke when we played, and you know, we didn't have the workout regimes and the diets and all that stuff. It was a little more old school. But the one thing we used to joke about was you only have so many bullets in that arm. And sooner or later, it's going to wear out. And you know, for me, it just was different that we didn't come up at such a young age. We knew in the Yankee organization when I played that you came in at 21, 22, you weren't going to get caught up at least till you were 25, 26, and you were matured and spent your time in the minors. That has changed a little bit because I think, like I said, the kids that are coming in have played that one sport and are in such better condition physically that I think that's why things have, you know, you're seeing a lot more young talent.
Having spent time at catcher, do you remember in the 90s when you played guys that might today have been kind of suggested, okay, take some time off. Let's look at your elbow. Let's look at your arm. Kind of maybe coddled or babied is the way that some critics would say. Do you remember your guys pushing through it and something that today would have had been shut down, those guys pitching through it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we were encouraged to push through it. We were told basically to push through it because they didn't have the money invested that they do in these guys nowadays. You know, and I think that's the difference. I think, you know, the minor league, the minimum salary is $550,000 now, which is, you know, which is really, you know, great for the guys. But at the same time, you know, these guys with these multi-million dollar contracts, they're an investment now. And they do have to be more, you know, scrutinized because when we played, it was more Advil, more cortisone shots, and just get out there and go to, you know, basically go to your blowout. And I think that's changed a little bit again because, you know, these clubs are actually investing in these guys and putting a lot of money out there.
Before I let you go, you said off the top that the Cubs not necessarily the number one favorite to repeat and win the World Series. Who do you think is the best team in Major League Baseball?
I think the Dodgers are primed and ready. I think, you know, but from watching them in spring training, I got out there for a little bit and you know, I know Dave Roberts pretty well. And when they played in Anaheim, the little spring training games that they did, I went out there and spoke with them. And, you know, they feel pretty confident that they have a chance. And I think, you know, it's been a long time since the Dodgers have been in the World Series. And I think it would be good for baseball for them to be back.
Jim Leyritz has an autobiography that's out called Catching Heat. He's also a co-host on the Sports Blender, which airs on SB Nation with David Meltzer, his radio show, and he joins us here on the show. It's good to catch up. You can always follow him on Twitter as well, at TheRealJLeyritz. So check him out there. Thank you, Jim. This is fun.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for the time, man.
You got it. Jim Leyritz joining us here on the show, hero of the 1996 World Series, won another championship with the Yankees in 1999. I forgot that he was traded right after that World Series in 1996 to Anaheim. When we come back here on the show, the great quarterback race, the arms race, the NFL draft is heating up with a surprise riser. DA, CBS Sports Radio. Oh, I want something just like—
The only rules to join the mothership, you need to feel good and be doing well.
What's up, buddy, dude? I love being on your show, man. We might have to get something going here, man.
Yeah, let's do it anytime. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, people need to start listening. Everybody listen up, man. It's great.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Doing More is brought to you by The Home Depot, the next generation of home improvement with everything that you need to do projects smarter. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing. Taking a look at a player doing more for his team, Michael Pineda.
Here's the 1-2. Struck him out, swinging fastball. 19 up, 19 down, 10 of them by strikeouts.
And you know, Susan, did you know that in 1946, there's a young man named John Pineda that once walked to school both ways. That young boy was my best friend. He was also a doll.
So glad we have Sterling back. The Yankee starting pitcher had a perfect game with two out. That was Yankees Radio Network to the top of the seventh inning. But then Evan Longoria breaks up with a line drive double. That was the Yankees home opener. It pitches 7 2/3 innings. Excellent baseball. Two hits, one earned run, strikes out 11. The Yankees blowout victory. 8-1 over the Rays. Yanks pull to a game within 500, 3-4. The Rays are 5-3. Beautiful day at Yankee Stadium. Some beautiful weather also around the country yesterday, specifically in the Northeast, which might be one of the reasons why the ratings were down for the Masters yesterday, despite the storyline, the drama, the playoff hole. You would have thought they would do some tremendous numbers, but some of the bigger markets in the country, New York, Boston, Philadelphia, D.C., were in the middle of a rare, very, very rare, beautiful 70-degree early April day. And so I think a lot of people just were not inside watching golf at that point in time. But what tremendous drama yesterday from a guy that was always considered a choke artist, and he flips the script and flips the narrative, which is pretty cool. Really is pretty cool. 855-212-4CBS. Tonight, the race for the one seed of the Eastern Conference continues. The Cavaliers are in Miami, resting both LeBron and Kyrie, and yet still have a 12-point lead over the Heat, 48-36, 6 minutes to play. Cleveland controls its own destiny as they are tied with the Celtics yet again in the win-loss column, but own the tiebreaker. The Cavaliers are leading, as I mentioned, now by 10. Meantime, you have the Celtics against Brooklyn, and they are running away with things as expected. It is 40-24, the Celtics lead the Nets, who have played better basketball down the stretch, but are no match for a really good basketball team like Boston. There are 6 minutes to play in the first half there. Celtics lead by 16 points. In the NFL draft, this is kind of interesting. To me, and I've talked about this before, I'll say it again, I believe Deshaun Watson is the best quarterback in this draft. No ifs, ands, or buts. But sounds like Mitch Trubisky is really getting a lot of love from scouts. And I'm not going to lie, he looks the part. Mitch Trubisky, big, tall, quarterback profile, big arm, put up good numbers last year in a pretty pass-happy offense. I get it, Mitch Trubisky. When he walks into a room, I'm sure scouts are like, ooh. He looks like a quarterback. You hear that a lot. He looks the part. Looks like a quarterback. I'm not in love with Trubisky. I'm really not. I think that Deshaun Watson, what he accomplished at the collegiate level, is as impressive as any of our recent high-end quarterback draft picks. Not only the Heisman, which is an individual honor, but wins a national championship, had two elite games against the best defensive coach of his generation and maybe ever, Nick Saban. Two tremendous games in a national championship against one of the best defenses in the world that we've seen in the last 10, 15, 20 years. And had the Crimson Tide won this year, we would be talking about these 2 years of back-to-back Tide championships as maybe the greatest defense ever in college football history. And yet Deshaun Watson comes in, down a couple of touchdowns early, and just beats him up again, tears him up again. And how that is not seen as an enormous leg up of the competition. I'm sorry. I know that Clemson had better skill position guys like Mike Williams and others than Trubisky had. But there's no way Mitch Trubisky was beating this Alabama team this year. No way. Now, there's a caveat with that, and that is that the running style Deshaun Watson is not necessarily what will work in the NFL. That particular style hurt Alabama this year. That dual threat was the one way you could beat Bama's defense this year. And in the NFL, that's not necessarily the case. So I get that, but Deshaun Watson polished his passing. In last year's season, he made better decisions than I think he did the year prior, even though his numbers weren't as good. He has clearly the big game gene. He wins a national championship. He plays against elite competition in back-to-back national championship games and has two good games in both. And he's the one quarterback that Nick Saban can't riddle, can't solve. And that Alabama defense will end up having, what were we talking about during the season? That they were going to have like seven picks in the first two rounds? So that Bama defense is going to end up being largely NFL players and high-end NFL players. So again, Deshaun Watson basically beat an NFL defense in both national championship games. Beat them once, obviously, but played well enough to win both. And people are going to go gaga over Mitch Trubisky, who I think needs help with mechanics and was a one-year starter. So I'd like a little bit more of a body of work on him because he walks into a bar and he looks like an old cowboy from a saloon. That's the reason. I'm not on board with that, man. I'm not on board. But that's not even what's most shocking. To me, what's most shocking is that if we assume it's going to be Trubisky and Deshaun Watson in some order, you know who the third quarterback is? And according to Jason Lockenfora today, who might be the second quarterback taken before Deshaun Watson? Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech. I got to tell you, I don't like Mahomes at all at the next level. At all. I really don't. And it's not just the air raid. I think he is so rough around the edges. I think that that also, what he does well is a little Manziel-esque in terms of needing to have the element of surprise. So many broken field runs that turn into touchdowns or big gains you're not going to be doing. And I just said that about Deshaun Watson. I'm not putting Deshaun Watson in the NFL because of his running. I think he's done everything else as well. Pat Mahomes, I have no faith that that guy is a pocket passer. I really don't. And I don't know. I can't believe that that guy out of all the other guys is rising up the rankings. I really can't. And you are going to see, this is going to happen again. You're going to see Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, and Mahomes taken to the first round. And now you might see Deshaun Kizer out of Notre Dame, who I also don't like, and Cal's Davis Webb. Also taken. We could have five quarterbacks taken in the first round. I don't know if we get there, but think about it. You have the Browns. You have the Jets. You have the Niners, none of which have solutions at quarterback, apparently. The Bears are fine right now because of Mike Glennon, but you also apparently have the Saints looking for Drew Brees' replacement, the Cardinals looking for Carson Palmer's replacement, the Texans, because they didn't get Tony Romo, and maybe the Chiefs as well. That's seven teams shopping for a quarterback in this draft, hypothetically, as JLC wrote today. That means you might get all five of those guys off the board in the first round, which I think would be a mistake. 855-212-4CBS. How about a guy that's paid to track down those quarterbacks? When we come back, Louisville pass rusher Devontae Fields, who's entering the NFL draft. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
To join the mothership, you need to feel good and be doing well.
Feeling good and doing well, DA. If you get permission to kick off the primetime four-hour intergalactic swag party.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
38 minutes past the hour. Glad you're with us. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227. You can always connect with us on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/TheDA Show. a little reminder that with Facebook, you're going to get all of our links, all of our podcasts, pictures, and videos, Facebook Live stuff, and all of that. So it's a good place to be. Go to Facebook.com/TheDAShow.
Yeah, get my timeline popping.
Jason's in Green Bay, listening to 107.5 to CBS Sports Radio. Hi, Jay.
Hey, DA, why don't you beat me up right away?
All right. What's going on, my man?
First, before we get into it, I wanted to, you think it's a coincidence that ever since the curse of Aaron Rodgers, he amicably lost his hot girlfriend? I don't know about that.
I don't know either. I feel like there's got to be something there. I'll say this. If he was going through the breakup when Mraz went up to him, then it makes the Mraz story even better because that's maybe why he was short. If he was still with her and then he said that to Mraz, then it really makes you think that, you know what? He shouldn't have said that to Mraz.
Here comes the curse.
That's right.
So what I wanted to ask you was, all these quarterbacks, Mahomes and Webb and Trubisky, all these guys are getting rated so high. What? I'm a Cowboy fan here in Wisconsin, too. What happened to Prescott's scouting report that he was only ranked, you know, fourth, fifth round? I mean,
yeah,
I know it's only 1 year, and I don't know what else we can go on, but I'm just wondering what happened there.
It's a great question. Dak Prescott was seen as a dual threat guy that wasn't a pocket passer that wouldn't necessarily translate, but also he got a DUI right before the draft. And they said, wow, a quarterback making that decision is a really bad decision. And so that dropped his stock in a big, big way. Quarterbacks are always a big story, but how about the guys chasing the quarterbacks? Devontae Fields was Big 12 Freshman of the Year, rushing the passer for TCU. He's 6'2". He's 236, at least listed as, but I heard he put on some weight for his pro day and ran a faster 40. So the guy has tons of athleticism and ability out of Louisville, and he joins us here on the show. Devontae, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing great, man. I saw and I read rave reviews about your pro day at Louisville. How'd you think it went?
I think it went pretty good.
Yeah?
Yes, sir.
They said that you cut your 40 time from 4.72 to 4.6, I think I read, and then also that you added like 10 or 15 pounds. Is that all true?
Yes, I weighed like 248.
So this is nice. So you added weight and strength, but you ran faster. That's a double bonus right there.
Yes, sir, it is.
Very cool, man. So I'm sure you got good reviews. And now with a couple of weeks to go before the NFL draft, how do you feel about this?
I feel pretty good. I'm just ready to see what happens.
Yeah? And then Where will you be watching the draft?
I'll be at home.
All right. So tell me about how this goes. Who do you invite to your draft party? Is it friends? Is it family? You want a big group, a small group? How's this going to go down?
I really haven't decided how I was going to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure you got boys, though, that want to be crashing the party. You got family going, okay, are you going to throw something? And you're like, I just want to get drafted, man. I don't want to throw a party necessarily. I got a million other things going on. But you know, I'm sure there's people in your life that's like, have a party, have a party.
Yeah, pretty much.
So in terms of pass rushers in this draft, there's a lot of them. And so with that depth of pass rushers, does that feel like you've got to try to stand out amongst the crowd when you speak to scouts or general managers?
Somewhat, yeah, I do.
So how do you do that?
Really just be honest, straight up, be straightforward with them and just tell them the truth.
And so I'm guessing that you're alluding to how you left TCU. You went to Trinity Valley Community College, then at Louisville. You left TCU because of a domestic violence incident. The charges were dropped, but there was that incident. So with domestic violence as big a deal as it is, do you get asked that question a lot by the NFL scouts?
Yes, I did. I got asked that a lot.
And then what do you tell them?
Just answer the question, tell them the story in depth that they wanted it. So just go from there and just tell them the truth.
So the big deal is just trying to be honest and forthright and kind of own the incident instead of trying to make excuses for it. Probably the best way to address this with teams.
Yeah, okay.
Devontae Fields joining us here on the show, Louisville pass rusher. So you come out of TCU, you go to junior college. What did you learn at the JUCO level, either about football, about behavior, about life in general? What do you learn to take away from that when you went to Louisville then and finished up your college career?
I learned how to really just take advantage of the second chance that I had got. Going to junior college had humbled me a lot, so I just really took advantage of my second chance.
When you landed at Louisville, what was your focus? Was your goal, let me try to get drafted? Was it, let me just try to be the best I can at Louisville? Was it to try to, you know, win football games? When you got there, what was your goal?
Really just to learn to play, really. That's the first thing, so I can play. And then just have fun, learn to play, just go from there.
Coming up,
I have a plan at the time.
How about playing on a team this past year that got a lot of national attention early, especially because of Lamar Jackson's exploits? What was it like to be part of a team that was really being talked about nationally in the early part of the season?
That was pretty cool. I like the way we started. I wish we could have finished as good as we had started, but it is what it is.
What was it like to chase Lamar Jackson around in practice?
I couldn't catch him, so when I got like even 5 yards away, I stopped.
Must have been incredible. Yeah. Must have been trying to like catch a water bug or something.
Oh yeah, he's too fast, man.
When you get to the NFL, what are you most looking forward to?
Shoot, really, my first game, just playing really.
Getting out there, first game, crowd, atmosphere, all that.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's pretty cool, man. You feel excited about this going to the next couple of weeks?
Yes, I'm ready to see how everything goes.
Did you have a workout with the Bengals? I think I saw somewhere.
I had it, but it had canceled.
Okay. All right. Have you had other private workouts with NFL teams or just the pro day?
Yeah, just pro day.
Seemed like you, out of all of your other teammates at Louisville, had really helped your stock the most. Did you feel like you excelled that pro day more than a lot of other guys did?
I think we all did good. I just feel like I did a good job as well. So I feel like we all did good, though.
I got you. Devontae Fields joining us, Louisville pass rusher, joining us here on the program. You could follow him on Twitter at yourboyphilly95. You know, I like that Twitter handle. I got to give you credit, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I like it. I like it. Your boy, Philly 95. Devontae, good stuff, man. Best of luck in the draft, buddy.
Thank you.
You got it. Louisville pass rusher Devontae Fields joining us here on the show. 855-212-4CBS is your phone number. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. When I checked out the Jason LaCanfora piece today about the quarterbacks rising in the draft, as soon as I saw Davis Webb, Cal, I thought about Mraz. Mraz, this is going to be your white whale, Davis Webb, isn't it?
It is, and I think it looks like I have 90% booked him on the show 3 days before the draft, on the week
exciting.
Of the draft. Yes. Exchanged some emails with his agency, and it looks like we will get Davis Webb. It looks like April 25th.
I'm hearing that the Giants might be looking at a quarterback.
I'm all in.
I'm not buying that, though. I don't think they're drafting a quarterback in the first or second round.
I think they could. If one falls, I don't think they'll reach for one. Like, for instance, if Watson and Trubisky...
In the first round?
If Watson or Trubisky slip to 23.
Well, Trubisky's definitely not.
Okay, and I don't think Watson will either, because everybody thinks quarterbacks will slip, and I think you'll get a run on quarterbacks. The Giants are now in a position where they really only have two pressing needs. That's offensive tackle and or tight end. And if all the good tight ends are off the board, and if they feel like an offensive line, like nobody really of first-round caliber is there, but one of these quarterbacks falls, isn't the ideal situation to put yourself in position the way the Packers were, ironically, with Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre? And have a quarterback
bit.
Sit there?
But Aaron Rodgers sat for, I think it was 3 seasons.
And that would be about what I figure a quarterback drafted this year would sit with the
I Giants. Think it would too, but then it started to create discomfort there in Green Bay for the final, certainly the final season. But
I mean,
then
the final season, they made the NFC Championship game.
But it was almost like, when is this going to happen? When is this going to happen? Now, I think that Eli would handle it better than Brett Favre did,
But I do think it adds a weird, uncomfortable situation where you're almost waiting for Eli to wrap up his career.
I could see that, but I think Eli is too much of a pro, and maybe that just pushes Eli a little harder the last couple years. And again, I don't think it's the ideal scenario that the Giants should be looking quarterback round one, but if one of these guys falls, why not do that? Why not set yourself up? Because if you don't set yourself up when you get one to fall in your lap, well, let's say Eli shot after 2 years, and then you find yourselves reaching and drafting a quarterback who may turn out to be a bust just because you need to have one there in that spot.
I'll tell you what, though. I don't think that Eli only has two more seasons.
I don't either. I think
the guy hasn't missed a regular season game ever.
Yeah, I think, again, if you have an offensive line that keeps him upright, I think the guy could play four or five more seasons. I don't think there was any zip lost in his arm this year.
What is he, 32 now?
No, 32. I think 34? He's 36.
He's 36?
Yeah, 36 years old. Yeah, I think he could play to 40.
He's 36 years old?
The Eli Roethlisberger Rivers crew are getting older, man.
Is that true? Wow, he is 36. He turned 36 in January.
So, yeah, if he's going to have his... So this will be a year 36 season, year 37 season, year 38. He could probably play a year... Another 4 years gets him to 40.
How the hell is Tom Brady still playing at this level?
That's where everybody gets fooled. Yeah. The Giants can't get fooled and go, well, Tom Brady's still playing, so we don't have to worry about quarterback.
Drew Brees is, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's... I don't want to take this shot. A little easier when you're playing in comfort, you know, domes and airing it out all the time.
Yeah, probably true. Yeah, and there's a lot less pressure on Drew Brees. I mean, he doesn't even ever make the playoffs anymore.
Yeah, hero in that city forever, no matter what. I mean, I guess there's no pressure on Tom Brady. Probably just doesn't want to go home and wear Uggs.
Yeah, but I mean, if Drew Brees goes 7-9 every year for the next 3 years.
Oh, Saints fans will love him no matter what and pretend those seasons didn't happen.
Well, and we really don't talk about the Saints as being, you know, a huge piece of the puzzle of the NFL script. But if Tom Brady goes 9-7 and starts looking bad.
That's a shakeup to the NFL picture. Yeah, I get it. Davis Webb, baby. Second round. I'll take him to the Giants.
You love Davis Webb. Why do you love Davis Webb so much?
All the looks. I'm telling you. All the looks. I almost wish he would fall to the fourth. He could be Dak Prescott.
Scott's in Wisconsin, 107.5, CBS Sports Radio there. Hi, Scott.
Hey, DA. Beam me up, man.
All right. What you got going?
Thanks a lot. Just on this Deshaun Watson, Trubisky, quarterbacks, you know, I'm just a casual NCAA football fan. I never heard of Trubisky, but I heard of Deshaun Watson because he's the Heisman and he's got the ring. And I want to make a point, and I'm a little hesitant to make it, but I'm just going to say it. I think if Deshaun Watson was white, he would be a consensus number one or number top five pick, because if you look at all those teams need a quarterback, and this guy's done everything you could possibly ask a college quarterback to do, and I feel like for some reason he's not getting his due, and I just cannot imagine why that is, because he's a great player, he's got it all, and if Cleveland doesn't find themselves a quarterback one of these years, they're never going to be good. So they got the opportunity to land this guy, and they need to go out and make the pick.
Well, no doubt that the Browns need a quarterback to ever achieve anything, and they can build and build and build, but if they don't have the signal caller, it won't really matter. Here's why I would disagree that it's about race with Deshaun Watson. I think we've crossed that bridge. Cam Newton was drafted number one overall. Cam Newton, because of his size, because of his athletic attributes, also won the Heisman because of everything that he delivered, the national championship to Auburn. Nobody really had many reservations about him going number one. Now, when you look back, you might say maturity, you might say this, you might say that, but, I mean, he was probably going to be the number one overall pick no matter who was drafting in that slot. So I really don't think it's about race with Deshaun Watson. What I think ends up happening is a guy like Deshaun Watson gets graded down because of his style. Because he was he graded against being considered a running quarterback or a dual threat. Before the season, he said it was a put down to call him a dual threat quarterback, which is kind of ridiculous because he ran for more than 1,000 yards 2 years ago. But I think because he ran so well, and he's not built like Cam Newton, which is like Superman, that he gets graded down. But, you know, that happens to a lot of guys. Like Pat Mahomes is going to get graded down because he ran or he played in the air raid offense. Tebow got graded down because even though he went won a lot of football games, He played in a funky offense, and he couldn't really throw the football. Now, I think Deshaun Watson's way better than Mahomes or Tim Tebow or Johnny Manziel. But I really don't think it's about race when you take into account quarterbacks. It's about style. And however that style is, automatically some scouts can't get past it. And I think they just, some of them can't get past the Deshaun Watson ran for 1,000 yards 2 years ago. Really. Because Deshaun Watson did everything else you could possibly want. And, oh, by the way, I think he's a perfectly fine passer. I think he's a very, very good passer. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, 5 in a Mothership time. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.